He said, if you can't take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you. I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air.
We potentially get that on the audio. It would piss off all the singers out there.
I think we're good.
Okay. So I think we're all a little tired and punchy. I know it's been a long day for Dwayne.
Oh, it has been.
And a long day for me. And I know Taylor, you jam-packed your head full of GIS.
I spent...
Autodidacticism.
I spent a lot of the day doing random errands that hopefully will pay off. And I went to one meeting in which...
What's this about?
Well, I want to be able to create, you know those maps where it has the results of the election?
Yeah.
I want to create those for basically maps that I think I'd only be interested enough to make.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I think other people would be interested in them. But I think that I would be the only one that would make them.
He wants to be his own like network, not war room, but you know what they call like the night of the elections. You know, the like election hub. Like Taylor wants to be a one-man election hub, so he can do like broadcasting, and he can put up like cool maps and have people zoom in on them.
So
is that close?
That's close.
Cool. So you'll be the map graph kind of dissect and analyze.
Data visuals are so cool, and then when you see them, you're like, I could make that, right? I've had this experience, and then I'm like, oh, this is really hard.
Yeah, I spent hours today trying to figure it out, and I am not very close to figuring it out. It was just one of those things. It was just one of those things that, it's like a friend of mine asked me, so what did you do today? And it's just like, ugh, I tried to make a map for 5 hours. Yeah, it's a long day.
Well, aren't there any, like, can't you study online for that kind of thing? I would imagine there's
to go and get the maps in order to do that.
Okay.
We really don't want it. There's a thing called a shapefile, which basically tells the computer the shape, and so getting that, like, where are those, and I don't know. I think Taylor and I, if I'm wrong, Taylor, you jump in, but I think we both are kind of like, yes, I should, like, get the book and read from beginning to end, but I just want to do this one thing, so if I can just shortcut it, you know, so it's like, get the software, try things.
Well, you know, to a degree, I hear what you're saying, because I know sometimes I've been trying to look for something specifically, and it's like, well, that's the limits of what's out there.
Exactly.
Especially in, like, a rural area.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they
no,
just don't do the analysis, and they don't have, you know, you don't have the resources that other places do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, just for an example, today I was driving around putting up signs in polling locations, because it's 24 hours before
mm-hmm.
the election.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can put them up at their locations. There's 42 in this county, even though we're a very small county, but yet some of the addresses were like so off and GPS didn't know how to find them. You know, some end up being a dirt road. You have to leave the county and come back in order to get to the polling location. I mean, some
we had
really
to leave
remote.
The county to get to your house.
Taylor's fucking British GPS guy, like, he, you know, he's bored after Brexit, now he's screwing with us. Like, we were halfway around Elysburg before we got to here.
Like,
I don't know what happened. It's
your...
the GPS's fault.
Yeah.
It's not either
it
one
like,
of us.
Oh my gosh, it's like, you know.
We came through Danville. I don't know if that's the fastest way.
Generally not. I jump on the interstate and I get off at Buckhorn and come that way through Catalyst.
Well, Buckhorn? Interstate?
Because you can really go up to the... There's only one around.
I know.
State
80.
Right. So you get on 80 and you drive east for a whole distance and at fast speeds. And you
Lewisburg
get off at
is west of here.
You're in Lewisburg.
Yeah, I know.
Catawissa's
east of that, right?
So, yeah, you just drive east for...
We did get to drive by Locust Township, which reminded...
Route 11.
Yeah, which reminded me of, you know, I was like... Locust Township, like, for
that's
farmers.
Where
I know, but we joked about this once on the podcast where I was like, why would farmers name it after a pest? You know, like,
oh, right.
Here's
that's
Droughtville,
right.
You know?
I forgot about that. We did talk about that. That's right.
Here's Boar, you know, Boar Weevil or something, like some sort of other pest.
Boll Weevil.
Boll Weevil? Yeah. Is that? Yeah, okay. Anyway, we should start. Did we start yet?
Yeah, let's.
Welcome to Barnstorming.
We started 10 minutes ago.
Oh, we started 10 minutes ago. Look, this is the idiosyncratic banter. Judy Herschel thought it was very funny. Yeah. Taylor and I got into, like, we're sort of, are we co-hosts? Hosts? Does it matter?
So, what's the agenda for tonight? We're doing...
We're going to talk about Wellstone Action.
Wellstone Action.
Right.
Then primary stuff.
Okay.
And then...
Well, there's, I mean, we're in theory, we're giving predictions.
Predictions.
Kind of going real quick off of, well, no, it was, are we doing predictions or are we doing kind of like our take on it, right? In other words, like I can talk about the two candidates in the 12th. I'm not really endorsing anybody, but.
I can talk about like some of the dynamics involved in the 9th.
Yeah. But
I, are we also doing I'd like to do a prediction.
But we do. I could do
I'm
a
happy
prediction.
To do a prediction.
Yeah. I mean.
I'm not in the predicting business, but I'll tell you what I think.
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I just kind of wanted to know whether we were going to do a prediction or just kind of give our analysis. But let's do predictions. Why not? I mean, I can't do anything on the 9th. I really am not following it.
Yeah. You know, I can't speculate.
But like the statewide and the 12th. So, okay.
So should we do Wellstone first?
Yeah.
So the backstory here is that in the beginning of the new year, way back story for the loyal listeners of the pod, Paul Wellstone was an immensely talented grassroots politician from the state of Minnesota.
You're not going to go Rachel Maddow, like, in the beginning.
there was Paul Wellstone. exactly. And he was a professor at Carleton College and lived on North 2nd Street, I believe.
But he was lonely.
And so he...
Northfield wasn't enough for him. He needed a bigger stage.
And so he...
got rid of all
he took his green. He took his green bus and traveled around the
green
state.
Green bus.
And was elected to Senate in 1994.
1990? First election I voted in.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
It's been all downhill since then.
Then he won again in 1996. Mm-hmm. And he was about to... Oh, that's right, because he was about to be reelected in 2002, mm-hmm. But died tragically in a plane crash 15 days before the... Right.
Something like that.
15 days before the
election. With his
election.
Wife and one of his children and some other friends. It was just one of these small... I don't know if I just remember.
So what was he all about? Tell our listeners what he was all about. What
people
what
power.
Community? People power.
People
it was,
power.
It was all of us,
justice.
Right?
Yeah, it was
economic
all of us.
Economic justice.
All
of us
are,
together.
Yeah. We all do better when we all do better was a famous phrase.
He also, one of the, I think one of the national conventions, he said, I'm here representing the people's wing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is so amazing now that we're talking about it, because we're in a moment now with the People's Campaign. Mm-hmm. Have you seen all of that? I mean, Twitter is on fire. Like, every state in the country, like, their capitals all have, like, these protests
every state.
And things that are going up.
That's
I was just going through it. I was, just before you got here, I was like, oh my gosh, there's Michigan and
mm-hmm.
Ohio and Maine
mm-hmm.
and Harrisburg
mm-hmm.
here in Pennsylvania.
No,
and just going
I thought I'd remember them saying they had 35 target and they were trying to get to 50, so maybe they got to all 50.
You know, and there's this song that a lot of them are doing that is just really, really great. And I sent a copy of it to Penn, and she loves it, Penn Garvin,
mm-hmm.
a friend of ours who says, you know, we need to have music that comes across it. It's called Somebody's Hurting My Brother,
mm-hmm.
and it is so, have you heard it?
No.
It's like, whoa, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on far too long.
Is that the response?
And it's gone on
far too long.
And it's gone on
far too long.
Whoa, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on
far too long.
And we won't be
silent
anymore.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That's the most public singing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's catchy enough, and I think it really can speak to things, and you can swap the verses out, easy to kind of sing along, and I heard it in several states listening just before you got here. I'm like, oh, there it is again, and someone's singing it over here.
Cool.
I think it's going to be a kind of a cool brother, or cool
brother.
Cool brother. I think it was
cool saying, brother, cool song.
It's like, someone's patting my whippet, and it's going on far too long. So we were kind of making fun.
Dwayne has
with the
whippet dogs.
Yeah.
So that's
so,
Wellstone.
Yeah, so and he died tragically, and there was, they converted his political organization basically into a 501c4, something like that, nonprofit, nonpartisan nonprofit. called Wellstone in Action, and they basically deliver trainings. Right. I myself did Campus Camp Wellstone.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, what? it was actually a great training.
You thought it was high quality?
Very high quality. I did it at Carleton, actually, so that felt unique. And
so the center of that work, was it all about like poverty and lifting people out of poverty, or what is it really?
So from my recollection, a lot of what it was about movement building and making power maps and and you know, like, okay, so like, what are the different types of leaders, and you know, how do you build an organization, and like how do you identify solvable issues?
So build it's movement building.
It's movement building, yeah. Okay. Right. And the trainers were really tremendous trainers, and David Wellstone, who's one of the people that was ousted, came and spoke to us.
Right, so let's get to what happened here. So
in the beginning of the year, the two Wellstone sons, Wellstone brothers, Michael and David Wellstone, were ousted from the board of Wellstone.
You had an email or something that explained it, didn't you? Or?
I did, yeah. I mean, it basically stated, and I'd have to pull it up again, that they were sort of irreparably in tension with the future of the organization. And
so what does that mean?
Well, so at the time I read it, I was very confused, and I kind of didn't really...
there was some confusion on their part, too, like they weren't quite sure why they were ousted, or was that... I mean, the other thing is, I mean, I read an article on it, I shared it with everyone.
Yeah, it was the front page of Politico, Sunday morning.
Exactly, so, you know, this got around, but at the same time, like, obviously we weren't in the room, we weren't with the organization, there's something in this story that talked about the budget for a little bit, and I thought, whenever there's money involved, there's always something there, too, and so, I mean, just from what we've read and what we've heard, but yet it kind of resonated with me about maybe some
of the
visions.
Well, the thing that they stated was that they wanted to pursue, you know, they wanted to win back sort of the white Democrats that were tempted by Trump.
Right.
And they felt that there was too much of a focus on racial and gender politics.
Right.
Whereas they were more
interested in politics.
Yeah, there was too heavy on identity politics and not enough on just like broader economic justice.
Bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that was expressed in their mission statement.
Can I read from the Politico article?
Yeah, yeah. And is a mission statement in there, Johnny?
Can we turn the AC?
Because that was really interesting.
Can we turn the AC?
Yeah.
So
you want more?
I
want less.
Oh, okay. Here, please.
Well,
you want less AC.
Yeah, I want less AC. Well,
sorry,
we'll
listeners.
Edit that out.
Sure, we will. So I think this will get.
You're sitting right by the pen.
I know. I just have my coat on.
I think this will get to what you were talking about. So, in a prepared statement, Connie Lewis, chairman of the Wellstone Action Board, said the group's quote mission has not changed end quote, but the group's staff and board of directors appear to suggest a shift in the progressive movement since Paul Wellstone's death, asserting in a statement on its website that quote a lot has changed over the last 15 years and that the progressive movement also looks different today than it did when we first started. In an early sign of tension at Wellstone Action, then board member Rick Kahn, Paul Wellstone's longtime friend and campaign treasurer, raised concerns in an email to a staffer last year about a draft tax filing in which staff proposed changing the group's stated mission from, quote, advancing progressive social change and economic justice, end quote, to, this is the new one, advancing progressive social change and economic, racial, and gender justice.
Okay, can we read that again? What was the old?
The old was advancing progressive social change and economic justice.
Advancing
progressive social change and economic justice.
Okay.
That's the old. And then the new is advancing progressive social change and economic, racial, and gender justice.
So they interjected the racial and the gender.
Correct.
Okay. And you know, I was talking with Penn about this, about when that happens, then it's like, well, what about people who are handicapped? Or what about women? Or what about, you know, like, it just starts to fragment to me, like, when they...
Yeah,
but then there's
start
the
cutting
argument,
off.
But
yeah.
Then there's the argument on the other side that says, you know, there's such an injustice there that we need to lift that up. And we need to speak to that.
Yeah.
And so there's this battle,
well,
almost.
And I think this is mentioned in the article that was talking about, well, the real legacy of Paul Wellstone, I mean... He worked on behalf of so many groups, you know, talk about victims of domestic abuse, the mentally ill, the disabled. You know, it's like there were many people in Paul Wellstone's coalition, or the coalition that Paul Wellstone developed, and peeling off a certain few.
So he saw this as a narrowing of their mission. With that statement, a narrowing of their mission. And so, with a narrowing focus on gender politics and people of color.
You're reading from the
article. But that's, I mean, that's what that mission statement says.
I mean, I feel like I've talked about this before, but, you know, I've been in the room with a lot of people who are all activists and on the same side, and more or less directly, you know, was told, if you're doing electoral work and you're not part of a multiracial coalition, you are part of the problem. And so a really, like, clear line is being drawn in the sand that it's not okay to do, you know, business as usual on the progressive side, which is that the white, maybe wealthier liberals are telling everybody else what they need to do. I think that's how I understood that.
I
hear it. Like, that's definitely a legacy. It's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And at the same time, like, I want to have that, and I want to be able, and I think we're on the same page, and I want to be able to know that when we say we're fighting for social change and economic justice, that includes for all people.
Well, that's the thing. And so I was talking with Chris about this too, and you said something in a comment, because I put this out to a bunch of our friends, and we all kind of had some discussion about it. And you kind of hit on something. You were talking about scarcity.
Yes.
And the whole thing reminds me of scarcity versus abundance. In other words, like, it seems to me that, first of all, Republicans always think that when we come out and say something like that, that we have a scarcity mentality. We're presented with these false, like, choices that if you're for A, you can't possibly be for B. Right? Yeah. You know, like, there's this scarcity thing that's only so much to go around. Mm-hmm. And so if you're for, just in general, social justice, you can't possibly be, you know, also social justice for race or for gender, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to an abundance philosophy,
right,
where you can have it all. You know, like, why can't we have it all?
Right.
And, you know, like, we always talk about the Big Ten, you know, and why can't it be for all? And I think that first statement really speaks to the all.
Yeah.
Well, so I was thinking, like, let's try and view this from their side, you know, perhaps
the people who pushed out the Wellstone Sons.
Exactly.
Okay.
Like maybe they genuinely don't, like, maybe their organization has shifted, you know, tremendously.
Become more narrowly focused.
More narrowly focused to racial and gender politics, and maybe that is a good thing, and maybe making it explicit is a good thing. Do they feel like that is not getting enough attention?
Well, maybe they feel like if we can't get that right, none of it's right. Like, that has to happen first. I've heard that comment before, that we have to get racial justice right first, and then everything else will flow from that.
I mean, I feel like...
I've heard that. I'm not, you know...
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's a completely legitimate point to raise, especially, you know, when you're in your big tent, when you're using that to drive somebody out of the organization, you know, I don't know, but let me leave that aside. I think, tell me if this parallels what you're saying, that, like, the ways in which I've seen DACA, and over this year, the last 12 months or whatever, people I know who are broadly in the movement, I don't know them well, but the argument is, like, something like, why do you keep making DACA the thing that you'll take off the table to get what you want, right, for other needs? And the first time that happens, you can be say, like, well, look, you know, we really, and I'm kind of making these up, but, like, look, you know, we got funding for Medicare, so we had to give up DACA. I mean, none of these are specific things. I'm just, you know what I'm saying? And then the next one comes, and it's like, okay, but we got funding for education. And then because I was trying to pay more attention to immigration activists, I was like, oh, I get where they're coming from. It seems like DACA is always the thing that the rest of the progressive movement
is willing to
push off or discard. And if you have a real transactional kind of coalition, maybe the first time, yes, but then we're there for them the second time. And I was pretty frustrated. Maybe it was Casey. Well, I don't want to go into details. Did Casey not vote for DACA? Oh, well, that doesn't matter. There was some time recently where I was like, felt like I was having to tell people, like, or I was kind of like, I'm disappointed in this politician. Other people was like, yeah, but we need him for the good stuff. And I'm like, we do, but this, right, this has been going on too long. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yeah, I think there's, it's trying to find the balance with those. And also when we start talking about things like that, we're taking it out of the context of the moment of what they were negotiating and what the clock was ticking towards and what else was on the table.
Well, and the transactional piece, right? Like we don't know within Wellstone Action or whatever if there was a, hey, we'll get to racial and gender, we'll get to racial and gender next year. And somebody's like, look, you've been saying that for 10 years. When are we going to get to it?
So I was in front of a trainer, a black man, who was talking about this and really talking about diversity and talking exactly about what we're talking about. And he went on to say that white people can't really talk to this because they haven't experienced it. And then almost like a minute later, as he's talking about how we should be lifting up black women. He's not a black woman. How we should be lifting up LGBT. He's not LGBT. And he's speaking to those things. I'm like, you know, how are you able to speak to those things when you're not those things? And I just found that contradiction really bothersome. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we did a privilege walk. Mm-hmm. And during that privilege walk, there was a question that was in the privilege walk that said, if you were walking down the street and you were afraid and went to the other side of the street, take a step back. And I thought, or take a step forward. Right. Take a step forward. And I thought, why is that a step forward? And the woman next to me said, oh, because you were afraid of the black guy on the street. I'm like, no, I was afraid of the white guy because I'm gay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and I felt this like, you know, it wasn't speaking to me. Mm-hmm. And you know, was I really in the room or not? Mm-hmm. And you know, and that's just like a physical example of that.
I totally hear you. I mean, I'll go even more, and you know, maybe this is controversial, but like, I think sometimes the problem with what gets talked about as identity politics is when it comes to the point of saying, like your trainer was saying, that like, there's this strident position that says, you white person cannot understand racial discrimination, or you male cannot understand gender discrimination. Like, you have no place to speak on that. And if that makes us mute, then we're pretty ineffective allies. And not only that, it also completely erases the possibility for human imagination. Like, what's the point of art? What's the point of trying to be empathic? Like, we want all progressive people to try. Yeah, and I get that. That doesn't mean that I'm never going to go up and say, right, this is what it's like to be a black man in America. Let me tell you a story of two songs. There's this song, and I forget the name of the artist, but the chorus is, I'm a black man in a white world. I'm black. And that's a great song. I like to sing it. And I sort of laugh with my kids because it's so ridiculous, right? Because I'm white. But I was listening to This Is America. Have you heard this? By Donald Glover, who's Childish Gambino. Have you heard it? It's this new, it's out in the last, I don't know, couple months. It's really, really, really powerful, the song and the video. And it's a beautiful, like, the video itself, like, brings together gun violence and violence and racism and America and materialism, like all of these really potent themes in this really, really effective way. And watching that, you know, like, helps, I think, me as a white man, you know, understand better some of those issues. So that's valuable. And if you set up racial and gender and other kinds of identity politics such that white people are always on the outside and have no place in that, then, I mean, I think there's two things, okay? One, for activists, it makes us harder to be helpful. And two, as a politics, you're kind of, look, it sucks that white people still have to be addressed and white working class people, right? Like, it sucks from a racial justice perspective, but we need them. And to set up all of your politics such that you're saying, like, white people are a problem and their white privilege is a problem, do you know what I'm saying? Like, that does not help us win them. That's not help Democrats win them over.
Tara, what do you think?
Does my last point make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's also big and complicated, and I know that that's such sort of a silly thing to say. Assuming their best intentions as to why they would include this and exclude those other people, like, I'm just trying to think from an organization.
So racial and gender?
Racial and gender, yeah. I'm just trying to think from an organizational standpoint, what if like what this changes for them. Like, are they going to, like, give more scholarships to people that are black or Hispanic and people that are of you know, of different, you know like, maybe not, don't fit on the gender binary? Or were the Wellstone Sons
but when you say that, I cannot imagine the Wellstone Sons or the Wellstone Legacy not being on board with that.
Yeah, but I'm just, yeah, I can't imagine that either. But I'm also just trying to think, like maybe they're like, well, you guys need to tone it down on this racial stuff because, like, we're losing, you know, white voters. Like, I would also be not super on board with that either because mm-hmm. I think that racial justice right. is actually something that, like, I believe strongly in a multiracial progressive coalition. You know, so if they were asking the organization to back off of racial justice, then I would have an issue with that.
Right.
But I think this is an issue of framing once again. And if you, I believe strongly, in fact, that if you frame racial justice right to basically, you know, white working class people, I think that they get it. And I think that the way through that is through economics, honestly.
So if
economics and justice.
So if you're in rural Pennsylvania and you're having a rough economic time, which so many people are, right?
Yeah.
Lost their jobs, their farm isn't working,
yeah.
whatever it might be.
Underemployed.
Right?
Yeah.
And all they're hearing from the Democratic Party is we have to lift up black people. That's all they're hearing. You know, it shouldn't be all they're hearing because there's a whole damn platform out there of all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But when they're in contact with various groups that are lifting up racial justice, they're like, how do I connect to this? Like, you know, like they could be very much like...
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. They're very much like, okay.
Yeah.
They're not very much
like, I think it's, yes, I think it should be, but you're not speaking to where I am.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a part of this too.
Yeah, totally. And that's what it should be on the national level. That's not what it should be on the national level. The way, you know, I think strongly that, like, we need to, like, I do think that racial injustice is probably one of the, like, cardinal sins of America.
Oh, yeah.
And it's something that, like, we do need to address immediately. But I think the way forward through that with a broad coalition is through a message of justice that I think resonates with a lot of people. So it's sort of like a false choice,
yeah.
almost. You know, that we've, like, fallen into a trap with, you know, we've fallen into that trap again.
What was the quote that you said by Wellstone that was a common quote?
We all do better when we all do better.
That's what it should be.
That's what it should be, exactly. And it
but,
just...
But what are you going to say if somebody says, but when you say that, you're a racist?
Why don't we switch seats, because I'm kind of warm.
Okay,
all right,
great.
I'm
so cold.
Yeah,
it's going right on me.
Yeah. It's like...
I love, you know, people when
it's
they when
72
they start,
degrees in here, by the way.
That's warm for me too. I mean, when people
listen
to our podcast, they are getting the raw, unedited experience.
Yes,
yeah.
they are right here. We're
right.
playing musical.
But
chairs
so
now.
So,
you need to look at this.
You know, it's sort of too bad. I feel like we all mostly agree with each other, so this would work better if one of us disagreed. But like Taylor, you know, so you we all do better, and we all do better. But what if somebody says, okay, but when you say that, you're erasing how black people through redlining or through police, right? Like the police thing especially, I think, highlights for the whole country and especially for black people and people of color all generally, right? That, like, no matter, like, who was the professor? Was it Henry Louis Gates who's the Harvard professor that got pulled over by a cop?
Yeah, and Obama, the beer summit.
Beer summit. Why are you handing me this?
Oh,
yeah,
I forgot about
that.
Here, I'll get it.
Class doesn't matter for him.
Right,
Henry
Louis Gates.
Yeah, the police issue and policing of people of color and especially black people highlights that race by itself is a thing, right? As opposed to trying to say, like, we can combine economic and racial issues, and
which I don't disagree with.
I don't disagree
with
either.
But I think the way in which we build a multiracial coalition is through the language of justice.
Look, this should be easy. So why is it hard? Let me just put it that way. Right.
Well, it's clearly not easy. We literally fought a civil war over
it.
We literally fought a civil war.
You mean the civil war, not a civil war among the Democrats?
The civil war.
Okay.
The civil war. We literally
fought
the civil war.
Solving racial injustice isn't easy. Sorry, getting Democrats to agree that an integrated approach to injustice, both I'm going to use the word cultural, and maybe I'll piss people off, but when I say cultural, I mean identity categories and economic justice, that we should find ways to integrate those both in our policies and our messaging and framing, and we should be able to find a strategy that provides enough flexibility for some Democrats to run on the parts of that message that are stronger for them.
Yeah,
you know, around,
like
if Wellstone Action had said, we will not support any candidate unless they run against the demilitarization of police and they endorse Black Lives Matter. I'm like, okay, hold on, right? Like, you are putting litmus tests that make it very hard for some Democrats to win. So if that's the issue, then, you know, and that could be it, right? Like, some people, I don't know in Western Action, but...
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, when I went through my Western Action training, it seemed less removed from, like, politics, so to speak, than...
Less removed. I'm just making sure I understand.
Yeah, it didn't seem like we were really talking about, like, and you have to support this, and you have to support this. It was more... mechanics of doing politics and movement building.
So when I said it's...
Than anything else. So what I think this is probably about is like scholar... You know, who do we provide scholarships to and where are we doing trainings?
But I think actually that might be easier to solve if you're an organization, because we're talking about scarcity. If it's like, how much of our budget? Well, one person says 20%, one person says 30%, and you start to work it out. I have a feeling that it's harder to resolve it when it's at this symbolic... level, right? Like, what should our mission statement be?
See, that's what I mean. This is the mission statement on a whole. I mean, that speaks more to than just what they're doing with their finances, right? It's their focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it, you know,
like it,
they really are. I mean, if you're changing a mission statement by definition, you're changing the organization.
Yeah.
I'm
extremely sad to see the Wellstone.
Sure, he's rolling over in his grave.
Oh yeah, because
seriously,
have you ever listened to one of his old speeches? I mean, he goes on and on and on about the different coalitions
of
people.
Listen to them. I've been in the room when he gave them.
Yeah,
wow,
I mean,
awesome.
He goes on and on about the various He has this huge coalition of people that are backing him, and it sucks.
And look, to be fair, when he ran, I mean, the only part of Minnesota that is not milk white is Minneapolis, St. Paul. So I don't know the exact numbers, but
yeah,
it was a different political dynamic. This is an awkward shift a little bit, but I heard Greg Edwards speak in November in Allentown. He's one of the candidates in the 7th congressional, and I was blown away, and I could not tell you the specific details. It was very... very black church.
He's
like
the minister, right?
He's a minister.
Yeah.
And he's African American and maybe also Hispanic. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think
he's both.
Yeah.
Like Afro-Caribbean or something.
I
or
guess the IU is supporting him.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I can't remember the specifics, but I just was in that room and I was like, this man is like, harvesting the tropes and the tone of the American African American preacher tradition. And like merging it with modern multiracial identity politics in a way that was so uplifting and so encouraging, and he also said one thing that I thought was really important to this debate, and it was something like, we need our white brothers and sisters as allies, but they have a different stake in this fight. I'm really paraphrasing, right? But like, they understand the needs, but their bodies haven't been on the line the way that Black and brown peoples were. And I was like,
totally.
That's right.
There
okay?
we go. Yeah.
That's honest and real about the difference, but not alienating.
There
right?
You go.
And what I was trying to say earlier was, sometimes I feel like I'm supposed to be silent in the room on these issues, right? When racial justice comes up. But I don't think that helps. It doesn't help us build that
coalition. I definitely agree with you on that, because honestly, I think one of the ways in which I'm trying to learn to be a better ally is by actually having more conversations about race.
Have you ever heard me say this? This comes up with you, because I lead our church youth group, and we do a lot of anti-white and racial awareness stuff, and all of the youth group are white, and having grown up with very liberal parents where we weren't allowed to talk about race. Like, if I mentioned race, that was being a little bit racist in my family. So for me, it's like, it doesn't help white people to talk about race by not talking about race.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right? That does not help them. It's better for them to talk about it and make some mistakes and learn.
You know, I say it all the time, but we're told as kids never to talk about politics and religion, and then we wonder why we don't know anything about fucking politics and religion. So now we're like, don't talk about race. Like,
it doesn't help anybody by not talking about it.
Yeah.
In fact, it actually hurts us.
And I remember I'm way...
it hurts us. And the point is that you will make mistakes.
Yes.
And then hopefully... other people will call you out and say, no, you said this and I disagree with it for these reasons. And then hopefully that'll be a productive conversation.
And the thing that really helps also, and this is the sad part of America, is you just need to know people too. You just need to be in social situations that are more diverse and get to know different people, and racial and all these other things, you know. Otherwise, it's always a very, and again, this is me speaking, growing up in a very white suburb, and a white part of a white East Tennessee just doesn't have a lot of black people. Like, I can remember people, my high school had no African-American students. Okay, yes, that was a problem. It's also, there are very few African-American people in East Tennessee. I mean, that's just the
way it is. So I was born in Brooklyn. I went to PS 17. I was one of six white people in the class. Okay?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Half of those people were Hispanic, but I took them as white. You know, like, they weren't black, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember being bullied as a kid. I remember my hat being ripped off, thrown in a urinal, and pissed on by a bunch of black kids, right?
Right.
To the point where my parents moved me into a Catholic school, which was all white. Now, going through that experience, what it told me was I'd never want to treat anyone like that.
That, oh my God, we could do a whole other podcast. Some other person would go through that and become really racist against black people, right?
No, I was just like, I would never do that to anyone else.
No,
that's
you.
I couldn't do that.
But couldn't.
But, yeah,
yes.
You're right. Yeah, someone could take the opposite.
I mean, maybe.
And just said, well, my parents were. I mean, I grew up, you know, where the N-word was used frequently.
Mm.
You know, an Irishman was an N-word turned inside out.
Do you know that whole history in America about how they
the Irish
and then whether they were black?
With servants, yes, the whole thing. So yeah, I mean that's how
so
we grew up. But you know what, we're not who we grew up.
No.
You know how we grew up.
I
mean, I refuse to accept that.
I mean what we're doing.
I'm also estranged from that family too.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Put a little bit of distance there.
I mean, I know
I'm happy for that distance. Are you kidding?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to be happy for, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, you were saying something earlier, Taylor, and this, I don't know if this will remind you, but for me at some point, you know, as an adult, like I felt like a shift in my head where when I think America or somebody says Americans, like in my head is a you know, multicultural, and that wasn't true growing up for sure. Like, normal was white and American, and I had to unlearn that, and that had to be changed and all of that, and you know that. So I was starting to say, like, when I was, you know, teaching more actively, I would talk about race stuff in class, and you know, I remember often I would have one black student, and sometimes after they got to know me a little bit, you know, I would find a time outside of class and say, like, we're going to talk about the race thing. I don't want you to feel like you have to be the person speaking for the group, but I feel like we should talk about it. And, you know, inevitably, almost all of them would say something after that or later in the semester. I'm glad you talked about it. A lot of my professors just won't talk about it. Right? They won't even bring up race because I'm in the class. And I'm like, well, how does that help?
Yeah.
So is this going to prevent us from having this blue wave that everyone's talking about? First of all, I hate to say this, I have my doubts about the blue wave. Mm. I know that that is contrary to everything we've been hearing, but I have sincere doubts when you have a president who is polling in the low 40s.
Mm-hmm.
How can you possibly have a blue wave when 40% plus of the country is solidly behind this administration that is so corrupt? It has, you know, I mean, corruption upon corruption upon corruption. I mean, how can you possibly, you know, that's like a Roy Moore thing, right? Like, how could you possibly have, you know, is there a real blue wave when there's a giant rock that's there or a cliff that's hitting it? You know, like, maybe that's what, you know, that 42-43% is, right? That's right there. Is it really happening? And then people, like, even the person who's running for, Nancy Mills, who's running for state chair, of our party, which is going to be coming up, you know, in just a few weeks, that vote. And now she's talking about, we have the map of how to do it with Connor Lamb. But then when you look at Connor Lamb, I think a big factor there was the Republican congressman who was there was very much pro-labor, and then his replacement, because he had that, you know, sexual thing, was against labor, and labor came out in support of Connor. So there's this dynamic that's in there,
you know,
about speaking to the people and vote local, which is like the campaign by the PA Dems of the idea of speaking locally to the people. So I don't know that that's a blue wave. I think it was someone who connected with the people, you know? And so I have serious concerns. It worries me that we talk about this blue wave when we have this approval rating that's out there, and we see him actually gaining approval rating as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I hear your concerns, and I feel them also. And I worry about that we're behind the eight ball, basically. Have we spent too much time talking about Russia and not talking about, you know, regular...
Jobs.
Yeah, jobs.
Healthcare.
Jobs, healthcare, and honestly, jobs and healthcare. Yeah.
So George W. Bush's approval ratings in Gallup and in the Pew polls in 2006, the beginning of 2006, they were hovering around 48%. They went up to over 50% in the summer, and then that was the last blue wave. So I'm not, I think it's important what you're saying, but also, okay. Just to me, that's an interesting historical.
Well, that's good. You know, I hope that that marker holds. You know? Yeah. But it just seems that the two are almost in contradiction, right? How could you possibly...
133%.
But who comes out, maybe? Maybe it's turnout. It's more about turnout, but...
On that note, can we shift and talk about the election tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tomorrow, right? This is the eve of the primary.
It's almost tomorrow now.
It's almost tomorrow, yeah. So, the biggest race for the Democrats is the lieutenant governor.
What do you mean by biggest?
Probably the most high-profile state, or it's the most. It is the high-profile statewide election for the Democrats.
Statewide, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much it matters. People ask me this: why does it matter? I'm like, oh.
I mean, what I said was, it's the top of the ticket. It's the top of the ticket.
Yeah, but for non-political junkies, that's not that exciting. I mean, in our congressional races, I would say more people know about who's running in the 12th or what about the 9th.
Here's why it could be important. If this person is totally incompetent and says something stupid...
And it hurts Wolf.
It's neutral. It could, the lieutenant governor could tank us. In an ideal situation, the lieutenant governor bolsters the top. Could lift us. Yeah, exactly. So you want somebody that's going to lift you.
Obviously, Fetterman is the progressive candidate, endorsed by Bernie Sanders. He ran, before, so there's some recognition there.
Yeah, and he's been traveling to basically all 67 counties.
That's right.
I'm friends with, I think, his political director, Bobby Maggio. And that dude travels constantly.
Yeah, I just saw him up in Wilkes-Barre. There was an event that was there by the Young Dems up there.
It was by
the County Dems, actually.
So, if
I read you the names of the 17 lieutenant governors since World War II, almost none of them mean anything to you.
Okay, well, that's all
right. My point being, it's not a launching pad to bigger
things.
Well,
I think, if you elect someone who has name recognition, and I'm certain with all the progressive groups I'm involved with, if Fetterman's on the ticket, that's going to be something that will lift them up.
I'm going to say that Fetterman and Nina Ahmad get different sets of progressives, because in my little world, a lot of people are interested in Nina.
Yeah, sadly, I've heard some bad things about her. So
I've heard bad things about... Fetterman too.
As well. Yeah, fair.
And I actually wanted to talk about this because, for me, this is.
I'd honestly be pretty happy with either one.
Can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of good candidates,
I don't want to disparage any, but.
No, what I wanted to say was, in my own decision making, this is one of these things where we were talking earlier about information. There's no polling on this race.
There's
one poll, but. But, people are like, well, who should I vote for? And I'm like, I honestly don't have great information. I have their websites. And then I have this thing, which is new for me, is what people who I assume
know a lot,
tell me about them. And as somebody who's been a scholar, I'm really uncomfortable with that. But I'm like, what's the best I've got, I guess? So for both Nina Ahmad and for John Fetterman, I've heard good things and I've seen good things.
Well, on the side, I'd like to have a conversation with you.
Okay, and I've heard negative things. But that's what I'm saying is, shouldn't other voters also have that information? But I don't want to truck in rumors, and it's this whole side of Democratic Party politics that I don't like. But
well, it's just politics.
Okay, well, I don't know the Republican
Party.
Well,
yeah,
I don't know the Republican Party.
It's the talk, right?
I don't like it. It seems inevitable, and I don't know how to navigate it. But in terms of lieutenant governor, I mean, I would guess that Fetterman's going to win. Are we doing predictions?
Yeah, so can I tell you why I think Fetterman's going to win?
Yeah.
So why I think he's going to win. So the five candidates are Fetterman, Ahmad, Stack, Cazone, and Sosa.
Wow, well done.
Yeah.
I'll bet 2% of Pennsylvanians could do that.
I have a funny story about Sosa, but go ahead.
Okay, but anyway, Basically, the only candidate that's not from the Philadelphia metro area is John Fetterman.
Mm-hmm.
And just on a strictly geographical basis, Fetterman takes the cake. In the 2014...
If only you had a map to show this.
I know. In 2014, in the 2014 primary, Stack was the only candidate from the metro area. So, I think just as a, on a structural level here, Fetterman probably will win for geographic.
Okay,
he's also raised more money and has a higher profile.
If Kathy Cazone weren't in it, you don't think that the men might split and a woman would get all the women votes?
I don't know.
But there's two women and three men, right?
That's true. So it's kind of a stupid hypothetical. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that I hate when pundits
ask. I think Kathy Cazone's fairly tied to fracking and pipelines, which makes me weary of
tied
her.
To? Based
yeah.
on what?
I mean,
she's not from that part of the state.
Her website, actually.
Okay.
I
mean, she's from...
Touted her...
Mm-hmm.
Her. I think she was Wolf's pipeline... manager or something like that.
So I've been lucky enough to hear all of them speak. Several of them came up. Three of them came
even
up
Nina?
To... Yes.
Oh.
Three of them came up to the Columbia County breakfast, so they came up here. And when Sosa was up here, so this is the funny story, it's so obvious to me that he's a dancer. So here's the first Latino, lieutenant governor candidate. He's up there, and as he's talking, he's standing in front of the microphone, and I'm standing right now. And when he talks, he kind of, sometimes people will tap their back foot, when they're talking, or kind of shift from side to side, moving their weight. Well, he was actually kind of moving his feet around, and at one point he was talking about his farm animals, and he kicked up with his right foot. And that's the only way, whenever I hear the word rabbit now, I kind of have this vision of him clicking his heel up to his hand, that was down there. But it was interesting to hear them, all three of them that were there, really related to the audience, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we have a lot of good choices, once again. I mean, it's obvious when we have elections that there's a bad choice in there. But that's not really...
But why would five people... Candidates. And it was 6-7 at one time. At one point, we had Arianna Berenger and Madeline Dean before Nina got in, I think. Anyway, why... I don't know enough about the history of Pennsylvania. That seems like a lot of people vying for a position that is... It is largely symbolic, right? I mean, it doesn't have a lot of power built in. It's the head of the board that hears clemency and pardons.
Right.
And it... breaks ties in the Senate. I think those are the only two things that are
official. I think it's really what someone does with the title too. For example, the one
bully puppet.
Yeah, it's a bully puppet.
But
power of the bully puppet. But
it's never been a platform for launching people.
But it could be. Depending on who you had in there and what they do. For example, the one candidate, and I forget which one it was. It was Madeline Dean, I think,
mm-hmm.
who said, a governor's or a lieutenant governor's mansion is not my style. I'd
mm-hmm.
make it into the center for the
mm-hmm.
opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the bully pulpit, right? And what you do with
it.
So I think it could be more meaningful with the right person in there.
Well, I think we probably said as much as anyone wants to hear.
So I think Fetterman's going to win.
I agree. I think Fetterman's going to win for the same reasons. And also that Ahmad got in it really late.
Yeah, I kind of am thinking that Fetterman as well is kind of the
all right.
The
watch us all be wrong.
Yeah, we could very well be.
I hope to hell it's not like that.
Stack could take the cake.
Man, I saw him at the Keystone Progress, and he was, aside from what I know about the problems with corruption stuff, just he just oozed insincerity to me.
It's too bad. I saw his recent ad too, and
mm-hmm.
it was, I don't know.
I didn't see it. All
right, should we do
some other? Yeah,
I think Wolf will win the primary.
Yeah, good for you, Jordy. You get the award for
obvious.
I think Casey's gonna win, obviously.
Yeah.
Who do you think will get more votes?
Should we do the Republican side? I know shit about it.
Who do you think will get more votes, Wolf or Casey?
Oh,
I think Casey.
Well, how would that even happen? You go into the Democratic primary and you don't vote for Wolf?
Yes, there's a lot of down ballot. People just don't vote all the way through, which I think in some ways is the laziest thing possible. As the further you go down the ballot, the less likely you are to choose someone.
Yeah.
I don't know the order between Senate and governor, though.
Well, either way, I think...
I would guess Casey because of name recognition. I don't know. That's an interesting question. What do you think?
I think Casey.
I kind of think Casey, but I would like to say that Wolf's ratings are going up, up, up. Like, they've really moved in the last few months. They've really moved up.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of communication there. I think, you know, 6 months ago or 8 months ago, people were saying, well, what has he done? He has this Republican legislature. Really hasn't done much. And we don't hear that anymore.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, well, you hear a lot more about what he's accomplished, mm-hmm. what he's been able to do, despite mm-hmm. the opposition that he has. And so, you know, and you've seen him before. I know I have. And he's not exactly the kind of guy that toots his own horn.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit more quiet, a little bit more reserved.
He's pretty cerebral.
He's very cerebral, which is kind of nice.
It is nice.
You talk about leadership and making smart moves and thinking about the people. And so I think but sadly, he has to run for office. And so mm-hmm. now people are like, well, where was he? Well, he was doing all the hard work.
Right.
And then, you know, and now they're hearing from him, and they're hearing from him on a regular basis because he has to be heard,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So, Judy Herschel, Mark Friedenberg.
I mean, do you have any outsider perspective on that?
I really don't know how that race is running. My favorite is Judy. You know, I've had a connection with Judy since before she announced. So, because I had met her prior to her announcement, and I thought that she was real. You know, she's a person who speaks from her heart, real person, really passionate about healthcare and the opioid crisis. I think that she's well-spoken. I've seen her speak throughout the campaign. She's gotten better and better to the point where some felt that she spoke better than our senator, you know, and then our sitting congressman. And so... I like her. I like her message, I so just based on that, I would think that since you know
mm-hmm.
she seems to have that, and she was out there campaigning a little bit longer, I believe too.
Well,
in the district,
she had
Friedenberg
a big advantage.
Sort of got,
he got drawn in. So,
yeah.
So, in other words, the district he's in is only, I'm guessing, 12% or 15% the same as the one he started running in.
Yeah, which
so
puts
that's
him at a severe disadvantage.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think she's gonna get 65% of the vote.
Wow, look at you! You're being very specific with your predictions.
Okay,
well,
all right, yeah, fine.
I mean, you're crystal
fine,
man.
I'm gonna say she's gonna get 72.
No, wait, you're not playing the game as right. So 72. So I say she gets 73.
Oh, we're playing the prices right.
There we go. Or it should be a, she's gonna get 61. Or what
yeah.
did you say? 62?
I'm surprised everybody went lower.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's going to be a little closer. I don't know.
I'll
say maybe like a 60-40 kind of thing.
And I'll say again, I think both Taylor and I have tried to be devoutly neutral
yeah.
in this. And at the same time, I've tried to make sure that both got a lot of access to as much as I could through you know Facebook and our podcast. Because
yeah.
I think competitive elections are good. I think they're both, from what I've seen, 100% bona fide, you know, grassroots politicians who want to run in that broadly in that, you know, we call it Wellstone or Dean or Obama, you know, trying to do politics a different way.
Yeah. I like both of them. I do have a preference at this point. And I know who I'm voting for tomorrow. I think either would run a good campaign against.
Well, I just wonder, why did you say 65? Why did you have Judy winning by so much?
Because she has a significant advantage on
mm-hmm.
on talking with activists in the 12th district.
Yeah, I mean,
and,
she also...
And I think she's also gotten out there more, because she's actually not...
She quit her job.
She's full-time campaigning. Mark is not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's raised, like, more than twice as much money.
I haven't looked at that. She has?
Yeah, she's raised...
And that's real cash?
120. Well, it's
not funny in kind things?
Well, no, some of it's funny in kind stuff. Not funny, but, you know.
Sorry, I just mean not
real
cash. I don't mean anything.
Yeah, it's not below bar.
Yeah. I put mine that high because I think the way she comes across to many rank and file Democrats is they're just going to feel it's the whole, like, she's like me, I could have a beer with her. Weirdly, she told me in the interview, you were there, people think she's Jewish, and Mark's Jewish.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny. I guess Herschel, but I don't think of that as a very
didn't.
Jewish sounding, in quotes, name.
Never thought
Goldstein
that.
Or something, you know, would
yeah.
people might think is
Jewish. People think I'm Jewish, I have no idea.
So So what about the ninth? You've had a three-way race. I wish I had heard more about it.
Yeah, so I think the conventional wisdom would put it on Wolf for a few reasons. He's raised a ton of money.
Wolf?
Including, Denny Wolf.
Oh.
Yeah, Denny Wolf. So the candidates are Denny Wolf, it's Greg Wegman, or Gary Wegman, and Laura Quick are the
No relationship to the Wegman.
No. Gary Wegman. And so...
But Denny Wolf, he's old as Methuselah, isn't he?
So he was formerly the agricultural secretary for the state.
Yeah.
He was asked to run, I think, by, Rendell. He has kind of like the party behind him.
I made a face for our listeners about Rendell.
Scrunched your face.
Yeah.
He has a lot of money. Last week and this week, I got three mailers from him. Full color, full page, mm-hmm. Expensive looking stuff. I'm a super voter, so I would expect to get something. But he also, that's probably like, I think I got maybe two or three before that. So I've had five or six mailers from him.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So yeah, and there are signs up everywhere. But it seems like he's doing a lot of campaigning in Columbia County and not in the rest of the district as much.
Does it have a big population advantage?
No, it really doesn't. It's his home. He shouldn't have to,
right.
Do that bad. But quite honestly, the local, Indivisible group is not really behind him. They find that the other two candidates are more progressive, especially when it comes to healthcare. So, Gary Wegman, that's who I'm going to be voting for. I'm fine saying that on the air. But we have three good choices.
Wolf's website sucks.
You would think with a lot of money it'd be better, right?
I mean, it's a little better. I mean, I went to iPriorities and it's just pictures. And I like the pictures, I'm like, I don't know what that means in terms of your priorities. But when you mouse over them, it has words. But anyway. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So Gary Wegman, we have a bottle of his wine here, by the way. You need to try that. He's a farmer, but he's also a dentist.
Is that how he got your vote, Twain?
The bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not really that much of a drinker, so that wouldn't be it. You got my vote.
Your teeth look great.
Oh, well, thank you.
So you're a dentist, too?
He's a dentist as well.
But is it yours?
Yeah, he put all these caps on my teeth. Yeah, normally I have pretty ragged-looking teeth here, but no. He's a dentist. He's a farmer. It's kind of the farmers in the family. I had both Gary Wegman and Laura Quick on WKOK as well. I interviewed both of them. They both did an outstanding job. Really kind of reaching out to people. They're very sincere in, they don't have to learn what it is to be a progressive. They already are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the differences, I think, that's there. Someone put a question to me and asked me about Wolf and said, how is he on LGBT issues? So someone who obviously wanted to vote based upon those issues. And I said, I really don't know. He has relatives who are gay, but I don't know how he would actually vote in a pinch. I honestly don't know. Whereas I've heard his...
So does Dick Cheney.
Yeah, really. Does that matter? Yeah, good point. And that's actually what the person said to me was good point. But I know that Gary and Laura Quick have both been very clear about their stance with LGBT equality, LGBTQ equality, ! So,
Do you think Danny Wolf's going to win, but you're throwing your support behind Gary Wegman?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Maybe the vote gets split between the two men and Laura Quick walks away with it.
I mean...
That's happened before. I mean, look, we were talking about Fetterman, right? That's how we ended up with Katie McGinty. The two men, Joe Sestak and Fetterman split the vote and Katie won.
I don't know if that's the whole...
No, but that's a factor. I mean, we know as Democrats, I've talked to Democrats, everywhere. When you don't really know the candidates,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them will vote for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. That's, part of the decision-making process. People vote, hey, this person lives in a town where my brother lives. I'm going to vote for them.
Yeah. I mean,
who knows?
You never know. I will say it's amazing, and this is something that I've sort of enjoyed, and always really have enjoyed, about being a political person. People like, Taylor, who do I vote for? I love
it. Really?
I
don't like that. That's what I was just talking about earlier. I'm like, look.
I got to get a kick out
of it. I kind of got into a big fight with discussion with somebody because of stuff I put in there. Like, you should be saying this. And I was like, you go say it, right? If it's your candidate, right, right, you right. go say it. And they're like, well, I don't want to badmouth. I don't want to get into the details, but like, I don't want to seem like I'm badmouthing the other person. I'm like, I don't see how saying I like this candidate for X, Y, and Z is badmouthing the other person, right? Like, why do you need me to go out and convince people? I stated what my opinion is about these candidates. You go state your own opinion.
You know, I didn't give Laura a fair shot. She's actually endorsed by three unions. Oh, I mean, she works for UPS, and she's done that for years, so it's, you know, hard work. Prior to that, she was a teacher. She spoke French, or she taught French here in the U.S., and she spoke English in France.
Is UPS the Postal Service or the Parcel Service? I feel like people use...
Postal Service.
Okay, I feel
no,
like...
No, it's not the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, I feel like sometimes people use UPS for the... Oh, no, they don't.
USPS. They exchange...
I'm completely stupid. Just
it's the brown truck.
Yes.
Okay.
Not the one with the eagle on it.
Yeah, it's not the right one.
I'm just not being dyslexic on that.
I guess they could have postal. They could go postal.
Children from being a teacher to a UPS employee?
You know why?
Well, I'm curious.
She had a complicated pregnancy, and she needed insurance. And because when she came back from France, she was only able to get back into education for substitute teaching. She didn't have health benefits. She needed health care. So she went to UPS. So this is what I mean. Like, she speaks to the people, right? She had to leave teaching, which she had done, you know, as a good part of her life, to go work at UPS, and she got into management first, and now she, like, you know what? She prefers kind of doing the deliveries, and while doing that, she's always talking to business owners and, you know, kind of meeting with people, handshake, you know.
That kind of thing, that's probably...
That's good politics.
Well, especially if she were running, like, for county commissioner, like, or state office, that could be super valuable.
She's a member of state committee, too. That's where I first met her.
Well, she's got a good name.
What do you guys...
Laura Quick.
Yeah.
That's a great name for running.
Yeah, I can envision a really snappy ad, TV ad.
Yeah, she needs a little bit of help with her campaign, quite honestly, I think. So.
What do you guys think for GOP governor?
I haven't even been following it, to be honest.
I think...
Which is the one that's named after a piece of fruit? Papaya?
Mango.
Oh, okay.
I think Wagner is going to
blueberry.
Win, but I think it's going to be close.
Which is the nutty one?
Wagner.
Wagner's the one who
they're
says
all.
Well, they're all nutty. Yeah.
Oh, I thought one of them was even nuttier than normal.
I mean,
this
Wagner's
is
pretty.
If I had not become so involved in politics, I would know so much more about it because I'd be reading the news. But most of my day, I feel like I'm, you know, on Facebook trying to figure things out. Blah blah blah. I don't read as much news as I used to, or not at that level.
I don't read as much news as I used to either.
So I really haven't been following it.
So here's something to think about. 2 days from now, there's going to be an action in Harrisburg with whoever wins the GOP candidacy for governor,
mm-hmm.
because all three of them have made their intentions very clear. They do not want to raise the minimum wage. They do not support unions. They want to go...
Well,
like,
Wagner does support raising the minimum wage. He just recently came out with that.
That's
right.
Wow. But prior to that, you know, his actions did not match his walk, and they still don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Wait, it's Wagner, Mango, and the woman.
Ellsworth.
Sorry.
Anyway, it's very clear that they want to take away collective bargaining. They want unions dead. And so there's going to be an action in Harrisburg based upon that, on the idea that, you know what, you're not just fighting Wolf, you're fighting all of us. And so there's going to be a big thing happening on the 17th, just to kind of 2 days from now. So there's a heads up for you.
3 days from now.
Yeah, 3 days. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What time is it?
11:30.
It's
and,
close.
And the podcast is at 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Oh my God.
Wow. So was there something else that we need to talk about?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, you know, if I'm trying to do this, if Ellsworth wins in the Republican gubernatorial, and if Laura Quick wins, and if Judy Herschel wins, and if that woman in the 7th, where Greg Edwards is, there's a woman that got a lot of Emily's List, a huge amount of Emily's List money. If all of...
Madeline Dean.
Did I say this right? Madeline Dean. Like, would we take that as some sort of sign about a year of the woman versus, right, if Fetterman wins, if Friedenberg wins, if Denny Wolf or Wegman, right? In other words, would it be reasonable to look... If we see a strong gender split one way or the other, if a lot of women win tomorrow in our primaries or a lot of men... Does that say anything about the high? Because you're about the blue wave. I feel like the other hypothesis out there is this is the year of the woman.
Well, that's interesting because I haven't really heard that expressed. I've heard a lot of people very upset about the congressional races
mm-hmm.
because there's only one or two shots at really winning those because of looking at the dynamics of the new congressional districts.
You mean, and so if at the end of the day we look at all of our primary opponents,
we'll be lucky if we get one woman congressman. Lucky if we get that, because the place where we could really do that in the collar counties, like Chester County down there, there's like three women or so running, and they're splitting their votes. And so, yeah, and so it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. And quite honestly, if Judy were to win, we know what a kind of an uphill battle she has beating Marino. So that's not really something you'd put your McClinko. Money on.
Excuse me? Or McClinko. We skipped over that one.
Yeah, well, whatever's going to happen there. Have you seen Marino's ads?
No.
Chris and I sit there and laugh at them.
Is it followed by, if you need help because you're being sued by your congressman, call... He's called Saul.
Oh my God.
Are you being sued by your congressional representative? Wait. Call 1570 defame. I will defend you.
Oh my God.
I still love who gives Marino advice. I'll tell you what, you're in a competitive primary and you're very unpopular. Why don't you sue some of your constituents?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Sounds like what could go wrong.
Sounds like a great plan.
Sounds like a great plan.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if yard signs mean anything, but there are so many more McClinko yard signs than Marino.
I can tell you that they mean nothing.
Mm-hmm. But then, you know, people, especially on our side, like, I cannot tell you how many good-meaning Democrats, not just this cycle, but in general, get very worked up about yard signs. I'm like, why don't you spend that energy on things that will probably matter, like registering voters or doing stuff on social media?
Some people are so random with yard signs. I mean, they're good. You have to use them the right way. Like, you don't want to put them somewhere where you're reminding your competitors to come out. You know, like, if you
well,
put
that
them
too,
in,
they start
some
to,
of the demographics you really have to think about.
It's like they're playing yard sign Risk or Stratego, you know? They're like, well, we shouldn't put it on this corner and, like, 15-minute debates about which one. I'm like, really? Like,
so I did something in a community that I really wanted to win. When I ran for office a few years ago, I really wanted to win Berwick. And so what I did was, I had gone out, and when I was getting signatures, I did my signatures in that community. And while I was asking for signatures to run for office, I was saying, by the way, can I put up a yard sign 30 days before the election? And then I would mark that off. So I had this running list of all these months, and I was always like, would you like one? Would you like one? I'll put it up. I'll take it down. And so then overnight, I had about 400 yard sign goes up in the city of Berwick. And the next morning, they woke up, they were all over the place. And you look down the street, and all you'd see were yard signs coming down there. And that got me some earned media. You know, there were the newspaper was covering it, the radio station was covering it.
They covered all these, the Heisler.
All the Heisler signs went up at the same time in one community. And that's what I did. So I used it in order to do earned media. And I did it in a community where I really wanted to fight. I really wanted to fight and get out that Democratic vote. No, I did not. I came very close in two of the districts of Berwick's four, but did not win in there. But I knew that that's where the fight needed to happen. I was at the tail end of, you know, it just was not a good year. That was part of it. But I'm also first and only open gay candidate to run in the county. And there was all kinds of that went on.
That's so. Historically validated? You're sure of that?
Well, the one out, at least.
Oh, well, yeah. Sorry.
Openly.
Yeah.
What year was this?
Somebody described me as a politician the other day. Is that an insult? She said, I'm like a community person, and you're like a politician.
Glen, Wilpon, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Max Tony, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punks Tony, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Telenova, Novo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been everywhere. Then Stump Creek, Penns Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakeslee, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Row, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela. Oh, well, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.